Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Labor Day series of Shiurim. Thank you to all of you who came yesterday. Thank you to all who are here with us today. The topic that we're going to discuss is the issue of Hataras Nedarim on Erev Rosh Hashanah. For the women who are in the room, we're going to talk a little bit briefly in the middle of our discussion about women's role in Hataras Nedarim on Erev Rosh Hashanah. I would imagine most women in the room probably do not come to shul on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Is that correct? I would imagine most women in the shul probably do not do their own Hataras Nedarim. So this is a questionable practice. If in fact we're supposed to be doing Hataras Nedarim, what about the women? Why do they not count? So this is a major problem. So we'll discuss a little bit about that. Let's just back up a little bit and talk about where this practice comes from and why is it that we do it on Erev Rosh Hashanah? This has become the practice in all communities, basically all over the world. Why is it that we have this practice to do Hataras Nedarim on Erev Rosh Hashanah? So the Shari Tshuva, which is one of the commentaries on the page in Shulchan Aruch himself, quotes from the Shalah, who writes that the Gemara has a Nedarim Daf Chav Gimel. HaRotzeh Shalo Yiskaimu Nedarim Shal Kal Hashanah. The Gemara already seems to say that there was such a practice. The Gemara says somebody who wants that all the Nedarim that were made throughout the year should no longer be valid and should now be nullified. Yamod Bein Rosh Hashanah V'yomar Kal Nedarim She'ani Asid Lida Rashanah Zu Yihiyu B'Telim. So the Gemara already gives us such a concept that they used to have people who would get up before Rosh Hashanah and say, any Nedarim that I'm going to make for the coming year should not be valid anymore. So this is basically where the practice comes from. And this is, later on, we have somehow come up with this Nusach as we know it, with the text as we know it, and that is where the Hataras Nedarim came from, which is a question in and of itself. Where did the text actually come from? The text as we know it, Shimuna Dayane, Mumchim, the whole Nusach that we say, where exactly does this stem from? That's not so clear. They're one of the Dayanim in Worms. We know one of the big kehillos in Europe was Speyer, Worms, and Vermeise. So the Av Beis Din in Worms was doing some research about where the origins of the Hataras Nedarim Nusach actually came from. So he writes as follows. He says, Darash v'chakar b'sifrei ha-menhagam ha-kanmonim, I look through all of the earlier svarim, ki ein kol zecher l'tikun zeh d'hataras nedarim sh'nogim bo erev Rosh Hashanah, b'shum echad m'sifrei ha-menhagim ha-kanmonim sh'bo'u liyadi. I could not find a source in any of the sifrei ha-kanmonim that actually tell us where this paragraph of Hataras Nedarim actually comes from, which is interesting. The Gemara already tells us that there was such a concept. We find that this is the practice all over the world. However, when the Av Beis Din in Worms was looking for the source, how do we know that there's such a concept of Hataras Nedarim, and where does this particular paragraph, this Nusach, actually come from? That was something that was unclear, and that was something that he was not able to document. So then he goes on to say, V'harishon she'ala zeh b'sifrahu harav val sha'rei tzion. He says, the first place where I found it was in Reb Chaim Vital, who said that he heard it from his Rebbe, the Arizal, who lived in the mid-1500s. So that's not old. In the mid-1500s, that's where this whole paragraph actually came from, which to me I found very interesting. This has become such a mainstay of our davening. It's become such a mainstay of our ritual. It's such a main part of what we do when we go into Rosh Hashanah. And in fact, it really doesn't have such strong roots. It seems to have begun in the 1500s by the Arizal. He's the one who seems to have made up this Nusach as we know it. So again, the Gemara says that we have a concept of doing Hataras Nedarim before Rosh Hashanah. There are other Achronim who point out that perhaps there are some Ramazim, there are some other reasons why we do it before Rosh Hashanah. Reb Shlomo Kluger writes in his Sefer when he talks about different issues of Hataras Nedarim. So Reb Shlomo Kluger points out maybe it's because on Rosh Hashanah night we recite a paragraph at the end of davening, actually, we say the David Mizmar LaHashem Haaretz Umeloah. So we say that back and forth. Each pasuk, the Chazan recites, and then the Tzibur recites back. So what do we say in that pasuk? Mi Yale Behar Hashem Umi Yakum B'Mekom Kadsho. Says of Shlomo Kluger. We talk about on Rosh Hashanah our yearning, our want to go ahead and become closer. Mi Yale Behar Hashem. Who is going to be so fortunate to be Ole Behar Hashem, to go up on the mountain of God, Umi Yakum Mekom Kadsho, who is going to have that connection with Him? Why do we want to be close with Him? Because Yisa Beracha Me'es Hashem, that's the next pasuk, he who is close with God is going to have many blessings in their own life. Utzdakam Lehe Yisho. Well, says Rabbi Makluger, if you keep going through those psukim, what does the next pasuk say? Who is going to have this connection? Who is going to be able to have that bracha me'es Hashem utzdaka me'elokei Yisho? Who is going to be able to have all of those blessings, all those wonderful things? Nekicha paim evar levav, number one, we need to be honest in our business. Number two, asher lo yisa lashav velo nishba lamirma. So says Rav Shlomo Kluger, it's talking about a person who doesn't make false promises. And therefore, if we want to merit that blessing, if we want to have that connection, if we want to have that relationship, we have to, number one, make sure that lo nishba lamirma, that we make sure to annul all of the promises that we have made that we don't really plan to follow through with, and also to make sure that we are honest on our business. In fact, if you look in the nusach of Ne'ilah, many have pointed out that it's a strange type of thing when you think about it. In Ne'ilah, you would think we would daven for all sorts of different things, but there's one thing that we say, Leman nechdal me'oshek yadenu. The one singular prayer that we make in Ne'ilah, which seems to stick out from everything else, is we want to hold ourselves back from the stealing that we've done. And many have spoken about what exactly is this, but it seems that if we're not honest in our business, if we're not honest in the way that we go about life, that's something that can actually hold back our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The reason simply is because Chosamo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes. The Gemara tells us that the stamp, the mantra of everything that God does is absolute truth. It's something that cannot be falsified. And therefore, if somebody is not going to live a life of Emes, somebody is not going to live a life of truth, then we cannot have a relationship with God Himself. I think it brings to mind, I think Rav Shmelkami Nicholsburg wrote, why is it that God chose of all the midos in the world, why did He choose Chosama Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes? Why is it that His stamp, His mantra is Emes, it's the truth? So Rav Shmelka wrote, because that's the only stamp that you can't forge. That's the only stamp that you can't have something else of. You can't have a replica. So Chosama Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes, that's what it's coming to teach us, that it's something that we have to be very careful about, to always tell the truth, to always have honest ways in the way we go about our business. And number two, says the Pasuk, lo nishba lamirma. It's important for us to make sure that whenever we make promises, whenever we make commitments, we have to actually follow through with them. And this is why we make a Hataras Nedarim right before Rosh Hashanah, because otherwise it will be impossible for us, miyala b'har Hashem, it will be impossible for us to have that relationship with God. We will not be able to come into His type of gathering. And that's something that we all want on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, so this is why Hataras Nedarim is a very important concept. A third idea that I saw, which is also very important, is based on the following. The Torah has given us 613 mitzvahs. It's hard enough for us to keep them. We know that there's a parshan of Nedarim, which means that a person is able to go ahead and add something to what the Torah already said is asur. For example, Torah tells me I'm not allowed to eat chazer. I'm not allowed to eat certain types of meats. I'm not allowed to eat certain types of animals, certain types of birds, different things that are not considered kosher based on the Torah law. Now, what if I go ahead and I promise that I'm not going to eat these potato chips that are right in front of me? The Gemara tells us very clearly that those potato chips, now that I made a neder, those potato chips now become like basar v'chalav. Those potato chips now become just as asur as chazer. That's how powerful my words actually are. If I go ahead and I make something asur, even though the Torah didn't make it asur, I went ahead and put something above the laws of the Torah, still, that becomes just as forbidden as it is forbidden for me to eat chazer, to eat basar v'chalav, and to eat anything that is asur in the Torah. That's an unbelievably powerful thing, that our words actually have the power, actually have the ability to make something in the world asur, which is an incredible gift that we've been given. The same way, in the opposite direction, we know there's a mitzvah on Pesach night, eat matzah. We know that we have all sorts of mitzvahs. We have a mitzvah on Shabbos. We're supposed to eat three meals on Shabbos. We're supposed to do all sorts of things through the vehicle of eating, of achila, throughout the year. And over here, let's say I take a neder upon myself. I promise that I'm going to eat these potato chips today. So now, the same way I have a mitzvah of achilas matzah on Leil Pesach, so too I have a mitzvah to eat these potato chips today. Even though potato chips are a secular vehicle, what does it do for me? What is it exactly? It doesn't matter. But since I went ahead and I took a neder that I promise I'm going to eat these, it now takes on an elevated status, and now we assume the same way I have a mitzvah of achilas matzah on Leil Pesach, so too I have a mitzvah today to go ahead and eat my potato chips. So that's an incredible thing when you think about it, that the power of our words can create mitzvahs and can actually create averus. It can actually create a new reality in the world. The power of our words is such that we can actually make differences in the world. And this is not only in our words, it's something in our actions as well. There's a medrash, when we have the story about the Mechiras Yosef, when the brothers sold Yosef, so the medrash tells us in Parshas Vayeshev something very, very surprising. We know that the Shvatim were way beyond the levels of our understanding. Everything that happened in the story of Mechiras Yosef is something that's very difficult for us to understand, because when you think about it, how could it be that the brothers sold Yosef? They knew that Yosef was a tzaddik. They knew that Yosef was innocent. How could it be that they got involved in this whole story? But in the middle of that whole story, we know that there were a couple of attempts to try and save Yosef from sold down to Mitzrayim. One attempt was Reuven, as we know. Reuven says, well, let's just throw him in the pit. We don't really want to kill him. So how about throw him in the pit? And Reuven's plan was what? Was to really save him, to come back and get him back. He didn't fathom in a million years that the end of the story would actually play out the way it did. So that's really what Reuven had in mind. Says the Medrash, Ilu haya Reuven yodea. If Reuven had actually known, Shehakadosh Baruch Hu kosev alav hapasuk hazeh, had Reuven known that God was going to write about him, Vayishma Reuven vayatzileu meyadam, Reuven goes down for all posterity. Reuven goes down in history as the hero. He tried to save his brother. Says the Medrash, had Reuven known that God was going to write his name in the Torah, and God was going to write it forever, that he is the one who tried to save his brother, Hayamalicho Eitzel Aviv. He would have taken him on his back, and he would have carried him home to his father. Sounds very strange. What do you mean? Does Reuven want to do the right thing? Or does he not care to do the right thing? If he feels this is the right thing to do, so what does it matter whether or not he's going to go down in history as the hero? If you think it's the right thing to do, you should do it anyway. And if you don't think it's the right thing to do, you shouldn't do it. So what does this Medrash mean? Is Reuven that shallow? Had Reuven known that God was going to write about him, that he's the hero by Yatzileu Meyadam, he would have gone and taken him on his back and brought him back to his father? What does this Medrash mean? Reuven was that empty? Reuven was that shallow? It can't be. Explains this Fasemes and others sixth as well. That's not what the Medrash means. The Medrash means that had Reuven understood the power of one action, had Reuven understood that one action actually could have saved the whole situation, of course he would have done it. But Reuven didn't understand the value and the power of his actions. Reuven didn't understand, Vayishma Reuven Matzileu Meyadam. Reuven did one little act. He didn't realize that really he was going to go down as a hero for that. It's not because he was so interested in what his legacy was going to be. To the contrary, it's because he didn't understand how valuable his contribution to the world actually could be. That's what the Medrash means. If only Reuven had understood that one little action that he did was going to go down in history as him becoming the hero, a little action that we do can make us heroes, Reuven obviously would have acted differently. He would have done a lot more. He would have pushed himself to make sure that he was doing what he should have done till the nth degree. He would have made sure to resolve the whole conflict, to take care of everything, and make sure that nobody would have issue with the Mechiras Yosef at all. But he didn't understand how great and how powerful his actions could be. We know the Gemara says, we always talk about it, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur time. The Gemara has the famous story about Elazar ben Derdaya, who was a terrible person his whole life. He violated all sorts of averis, all the terrible sins in the world, and he was living a life of decadence. He was the lowest of the low. And then the Gemara tells us that in the end of his life, he has charata, he starts having feelings of repentance, he wants to turn around, he wants to read his whole life, he wants to have a complete makeover. So what does it say? Bacha Rebbe V'amar, after this, Elazar ben Derdaya passes away, Rebbe, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, says about him, Yesh kano olamo b'shah achas. Look, somebody can have an opportunity to turn around his whole life in 1 second, in 1 instant. All you have to do is make yourself available to want to change, to make your life just a little bit different, to understand that we have the power to actually make our lives go in a different course. I heard from the real Rabbi Herschel Schechter, who is not my father, Rabbi J.J. Schechter's father. He was around way before my father was born. So Rabbi Herschel Schechter pointed out that maybe what that Gemara means, Yesh kono olamo b'sha'a achas, doesn't mean in one moment. If you look in the Psukim, in the beginning of the Torah, Parshas Bereishis, we have the story of Cain and Hevel. So what does it say over there? Cain off as a carbon, Hevel off as a carbon. Then we're going to get back to Hataras Nedarim. But Kayin off as a carbon, Hevel off as a carbon. And what does it say? El Kayin ve'el min chaso lo sha'a. That's the word in the pasuk. God did not turn. Sha'a over there means turn. God chose not to turn to the carbon of Kayin, and he did not accept it. So Rabbi Herschel Schechter suggested maybe that's what it means over here. Yesh kona olama b'sha'a achas doesn't mean in 1 minute, it means in one turn. All we have to do is make one little movement, one little turn. We have to be willing to make that one little adjustment in our lives, and that can steer the whole life in a different direction. The same way if one is riding a boat and you just turn the rudder just in a tiny degree off the way it's supposed to be going, yes, so in 5 feet it's not going to be making such a big consequential difference, but you go a couple of hundred miles into the ocean, you're going to end up in a completely different country. And that's what it means, Yesh kona olamo b'sha'a achas. It doesn't mean in 1 second, it means in one little turn. To realize the power, the value of all the actions that we take, of all the opportunities that we have just to make those little turns in our own lives. Plenty of seats up here. Please. So this is something that Hataras and Dharma is really supposed to remind us of. When we come to Rosh Hashanah, and we want that God should listen to our prayers, we want that God should take our words seriously, then we also have to realize that our words are serious. If we want God to listen to us, if we want God to really understand that we're sincere and that we're serious about the commitments that we're making, then we have to make sure that on our end we're doing the very same. We have to make sure that on our end when we say Hataras Adaram, we're realizing, we're recognizing the fact that yes, our words are serious. And if we say something, if we make a commitment, it's something that we have to follow through with. And if we're not willing to do that, we must do a Hataras Adaram to make sure to get ourselves out of this very commitment. So you'll say, well, how many of us really make promises? There's a story about Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin, who was the Dayan in Brisk. Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin, you can come sit over here. There's plenty of room. It's okay. Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin was the Dayan in Brisk. And Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin once was at a funeral. And he came back after the funeral. He went to the Gabbai of the Shul and he said, here's a couple of dollars. He gave him some money and he said, this is Avur Kol HaKahol Shanochach Be'ez Tfilas Kel Malei Rachamim. I'm giving this money to you on behalf of all the people that were sitting in the shul at the time that we made the Kel Malei Rachamim at the funeral. So the Gabbai is looking at him, what does that mean? If you want to give tzedakah, so give tzedakah. If not, why are you giving on behalf of everybody who's in the shul? So he said, no. Because what happens? So often we go to a funeral and we don't even think about it. We go to a funeral and what does the Gabbai say? What does the Chazan say when he's making the Kel Malei? Ba'avur, that everyone's going to give tzedakah. So he's making a commitment on our behalf that we're all going to give tzedakah. So what happens? We all leave shul. Nobody pays attention. We all leave the funeral home. Who gives tzedakah afterward? You really go ahead and make sure to fulfill your commitment, to fulfill your promise, to give tzedakah after you leave the shul, after you leave the funeral? Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin was very concerned. He said, we all have made a commitment by attending that funeral. We have all made a commitment that we're going to give tzedakah on behalf of that neshama. And how many of us follow through? So Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin came back afterward and he said, our words are serious. And I'm willing to go ahead and give the tzedakah on behalf of everyone that they shouldn't have an issue later on and God shouldn't have a claim against them why they didn't follow through with their commitment. I read in the biography of the Chabina Rav a very interesting story that he was once, a apocryphal story, but he says that he was once walking in the street and one of his gabayim, one of the people who was walking behind him, one of the chassidim noticed that his button was falling off the back of his jacket. So he runs up to him with a needle and thread and he says, Rebbe, sit down. I'm going to sew it on. It's not right. Your button's going to fall off and then you're not going to have it. You're going to lose it. So the Rebbe says, fine. So the Talmud sits there and he's sewing with a needle and thread. He's sewing the button back on and he mistakenly goes and he pokes the Rebbe. For some reason, they didn't take the jacket off while they were sewing it on. So he pokes the Rebbe. So the Rebbe says, you know, it's okay. You don't have to be so concerned. You don't have to be so worried. I'll be all right. So the Talmud says, no, I'm very concerned that I'm going to lose my Olam Haba. I'm concerned that because I injured the Rebbe, I'm concerned that I'm going to go to Gehenim. So the Rebbe said, you have nothing to worry about. If you go to Gehenim, I'll pull you out. I know you were doing the right thing. Years went by. He was a young child at the time. Many, many years went by. And much later in his life, you can open that. Much later in his life, the Rebbe turns to his Gabbai, who was still the Gabbai, and he says to him, do you remember when we made a promise? He says, what promise? He says, do you remember that you were sewing a needle and thread? Do you remember that you hit me? Do you remember that I was hurt a little bit? Do you remember that I promised you I'm going to get you out of Gehenna? He says, yeah, I do remember. He says, don't worry, I'm going to follow through with my commitment, but do me a favor. Don't make it too hard for me to get you out of Gehenna. So they quote that story in the biography of the Chabina Rav, basically that this was on his mind his whole life, that he has this commitment to this person that he's going to pull him out of Gehenna. And it was on his head. What's going to be if this person is a Baal Aveira his whole life? What if he's in the depths of Gehenna? How am I going to get him out? And he was concerned about it. How am I going to get him out? And therefore, if I'm not able to get him out, I'm going to end up violating my promise, my commitment, to actually pull him out of Gehenna. So we get to a very interesting issue about women and Hataras Nedarim. Rabbi Kiva Eger writes that women would not be able to serve as dayanim on a Hataras Nedarim, the same way women would not be qualified to serve as dayanim in a regular Beis Din that we would convene for any other purpose. So when it comes to that, if that is the case, so many Achronim write, well, if a woman is not really able to serve as a dayan for Hataras Nedarim, so even though Hataras Nedarim makes a lot of sense that women should do it as well, the same way men do, but some Achronim suggest that maybe the reason why women don't is because if women are not able to be Dayanim, so what do we expect of them? They have to come to shul and wait around till davening is over, and they have to sit there and sit in front of the three dayanim in order for them to annul their vows. It's not really proper. It's not really right. Why should we be matriach the women? You know what? We're going to have something else. And what is that? Kol Nidre, Yom Kippur night, is the same as Hataras Nedarim. What do we say? All Nedarim that we have made, all promises, all commitments that we have committed to throughout the year should be null and void. And that's something that all the women are going to be in shul for as well, I would imagine. And therefore, most suggest that there's no reason for a woman to go out of her way and actually do the Hataras Nedarim on her own in shul on Erev Yom Erev Rosh Hashanah, because she's going to be covered when we do it on Yom Kippur as well. Which leaves us with a major question, then why do any of us do it on Erev Rosh Hashanah? Why do the men do it Erev Rosh Hashanah? If in fact we're all going to have the opportunity to do Hataras Nedarim on Yom Kippur night by Kol Nidre, so why do we have this mandate to go ahead and say Hataras Nedarim on Erev Rosh Hashanah as well? So that's an interesting question. There are some who have the practice to say after the husband or the man of the home makes the Hataras Nedarim on Erev Rosh Hashanah, so some go ahead and say V'chein Le'ishti, because we know one is allowed to appoint a shaliach to go and be matur neder on their behalf. So some have the practice to say v'chein le'ishti. My father has told me that that is not the practice as far as he remembers, as far as he knows. He said he never did it. And he always assumed that his wife, that my mother, was able to rely on listening to the Kol Nidre in the shul that we say on Yom Kippur night. So who is able to actually serve as a dayan on the bezdin for Hataras Nedarim? So we know you need to have a bezin of three men. Rabbi Kivir Eger writes in Yerideya that even though we assume that you're able to be standing by Hataras Nedarim, even though normally dayanim have to be sitting in the sitting position, and even though we normally assume that ein yeshivas bezdin balayla, generally a bezdin is not allowed to convene at night, they have to convene during the day, still over here we would assume that you're allowed to do Hataras Nedarim at night, you're allowed to do Hataras Nedarim even if the dayanim are standing. However, and some even say you're allowed to do Hataras Nedarim with relatives. I grew up in YU my whole life. I always used to daven with my father. So Erev Rosh Hashanah, this is the first time I'm not going to be, Erev Rosh Hashanah, I would always go ahead and do Hataras Nedarim. So it was always a question, well, how are you going to do Hataras Nedarim? It's an uncomfortable thing for me to say, well, your father is one of the Gedolei Ador, but he's puzzled to be a dayan for you. It's a little bit funny. So we used to sit there after davening, and people would say, oh, well, is it really right that you should have your father serve as the dayan for your Hataras Nedarim? The answer is yes, it's not a problem, because we assume that even though Hataras Nedarim means that you need to convene a bezdin, and the bezdin needs to get together, and normally we would assume that a dayan is not allowed to be related to one of the litigants, to one of the people who's involved in the case, still by Hataras Nedarim we don't assume that the regular laws of a bezdin apply. Therefore we would assume you're allowed to do a Hataras Nedarim by Laila, at night. You are allowed to do a Hataras Nedarim even while the dayanim are standing. And you are also allowed to do a Hataras Nedarim, even though one of the dayanim happens to be a relative of the person who is asking for the nether to be gotten rid of. One important thing to point out is the Mishnah Brura writes in Siman Nun Hey, in Aruch Chaim Siman Nun Hey, it's a very important Mishnah Brura, and that is, we spoke about it a little bit for the women that were here at our Shir on Hilchas Kiddush, so we mentioned it briefly at that point, but it comes up over here as well. How do we know when a gadol is a gadol? How do we know when somebody is actually of age of becoming a bar mitzvah? So the Gemara tells us, chazaka derava. What does chazaka derava mean? We don't go and check, a boy has to have facial hair in order to understand that he is now considered a gadol, in order that we really should ascertain the fact that he is an adult. So how do we know? Do we go ahead and we check the child's body to find out? Obviously not, we don't do that. So the Gemara says, no, we make an assumption. We make an assumption that once a child reaches the age of 12 for a girl or 13 for a boy, we assume that now they are going to be considered what the Torah calls a gadol. We don't go and check, but it's a chazaka derava. It's an assumption that we have that once the child turns 13, you have the right to assume that they are now a gadol, that they're now growing hair all over their body. However, when it comes to mitzvahs de'araisa, the Acharonim write very clearly that even though we have this right to assume that somebody is a gadol once they turn 13, we assume that somebody has grown facial hair or hair all over their body once they turn 13. However, when it comes to a mitzvah d'oraisa, we don't have a right to assume that we can base ourselves on that chazakah. So let's say, if you look at a child and he already has a beard, then there's no question, that's obvious. But let's say the child does not have a beard. We're not going to go checking the rest of the body to decide to determine whether or not they're a gadol. So when it comes to issues d'oraisa, for example, kiddush, which is a major example, that's what we spoke about in the shiur about kiddush, because very often you have the father of the home is not going to be there, and you say, well, the child just turned bar mitzvah, why doesn't he say kiddush? Well, that's not so simple. If he's going to recite the kiddush, he might not yet be a gadol, and he's not going to be able to be yotze, to be motzi, the rest of the people sitting at the table, if he is not a gadol. So that's something to keep in mind. When it comes to hilchas shofar, let's say, we want to, let's say, be mechabed a young child who is just bar mitzvah, we want you to blow shofar on behalf of all of us. Well, We all have a biblical obligation to blow shofar. If this child might not yet be a real bona fide gadol, he cannot be motzi us in the mitzvah of tkiyas shofar. And over here, the same would apply as well. Hataras Nedarim is a concept de araisa. So when we convene a bezdin for Hataras Nedarim, we should be careful maybe not to have a child who just has turned bar mitzvah, because we don't yet know for sure that that child is of age of becoming a gadol. And therefore, we should try our best maybe not to use that child. We should try, let's say, it doesn't mean you have to embarrass the child and say, oh, you're a pasul adayin, but instead maybe get four or five people. There's no halacha that says that you're only allowed to have three people on a bezdin. You can have five people sit down together, and therefore you don't have to embarrass anyone. That's a very easy way out. There is a Gemara in Yuma when the Gemara discusses all the very complicated avodah on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara tells us that even though it would have made a lot of sense, when you have, let's say, a toss-up between different karbanos that need to be offered in the Beis HaMikdash, we can open that curtain if it's difficult for someone to see in the back, both of those. And also there's no reason why some of the women can't move up. There's plenty of seats here. I don't need you to be uncomfortable sitting in the back. There's plenty of seats up here. So when the Gemara goes through the very difficult and intricate Seder HaAvodah, so the Gemara tells us that really it would have made sense when you're going through the priorities of how to figure out which carbon to offer first. So the Gemara says, really it would have made sense if we first would have offered the carbon that's on behalf of the entire Jewish people, and then afterward the Kohen Gadol should offer the carbon that's on his behalf. So for those who pay attention in the Seder HaAvodah on Yom Kippur, which I assume is not too many of us, so the Seder HaAvodah on Yom Kippur does not say that. We should be, but we don't. So what does it say in the Seder HaAvodah on Yom Kippur? It says the following. In the Seder HaAvodah on Yom Kippur, we say that first the Kohen Gadol offers a karbon, an offering on his own behalf, and then afterwards he asks a vidui on behalf of the entire Shevet Levi, all the Kohanim, and then only after he's done does he ask for an atonement. Does he offer a carbon on behalf of the entire Jewish people? Ask the Gemara, why do we do that? Really, it should have been the opposite. A carbon sibur is much more consecrated, it's much more special, it's much more elevated than a carbon yachid. Why should the Kohen Gadol offer his own private carbon first, and only afterwards should he offer the carbon of the Jewish people? Says the Gemara as follows. Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel, Kachi Midas Hadin Nosenes. It makes a lot of sense. You want to know why it makes sense? Mutav yavo zakai v'yechaper al hachayiv, va'al yavo chayiv v'yechaper al hachayiv. What does it mean? Again, mutav yavo zakai v'yechaper al hachayiv, which means it's better for somebody innocent who has already gained an atonement to now go ahead and offer an atonement for somebody else, instead of having somebody who has not yet gained an atonement for himself try to help other people out. So that's what the Gemara tells us. It makes sense why the Kohen Gadol first has to gain an atonement for himself. He first offers the carbon on his behalf to get a carbon chatas going on his own averis that he's transgressed over the year. And only afterward does he move forward to offer the carbon of, number one, the Kohanim, and then afterward the Jewish people as a whole. That's what the Gemara tells us. Based on that, Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes in his Siddur Yaivitz, he suggests that maybe when we have Kaparos on Erev Yom Kippur, it's an interesting extrapolation that he takes from this Gemara, but he says, maybe when we have this opportunity to do kaparos on Erev Yom Kippur, so you should have somebody who already did the kaparos wave the chicken over your head. Why? Because it makes sense for somebody who has already gained an atonement for themselves, do the atonement for somebody else. So therefore we assume, please, there's plenty of seats. So we assume that it would be okay if you did it the other way. However, Rabbi Yaakov Emden suggests maybe there's a mila, maybe it makes more sense to have somebody who has already gained an atonement do the kaparos on your behalf. And so to over here, Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank quotes from the Lublina Rav, from the Torah's Chesed, that it would make sense as well, perhaps, when it comes to Hataras Nedarim, if we would be able to do a Hataras Nedarim by those who have already been matir their own Nedarim. Now, this is not always possible, because somebody has to go first. But he suggests that maybe it would make sense, based on this Gemara and Yuma, maybe it would make a lot of sense if we would do the Hataras Nedarim in a way that we were able to have Dayanim who were already matir their own Nedarim. Now, Hataras Nedarim, we would say, how often do we make commitments? And this is what we said before about Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin, that we all make a commitment when we go to a funeral, when we go to a levaya, and sometimes we don't even notice it. Sometimes it's a commitment that we're getting involved with that we don't even think about. But there are commitments that we make that we are aware of. Some people might not realize that they require Hataras Nedarim as well. And that would go as follows. The Gemara says in Nedarim Daf Tezvav that we would assume generally that a minhag dino keneder. If I take upon myself to do some sort of minhag tov, I take upon myself that I want to have some sort of very good practice, very just practice, that's something that is binding on me like a neder. So for example, the Achronim talk about, let's say a woman takes upon herself that even though she's not obligated to do a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama, even though when you have a time-bound mitzvah, really, biblically speaking, we would assume a woman does not have to keep a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. However, the Minchas Chinuch and others talk about the fact that if a woman already has become accustomed, let's say, tikiyah shofar is something a woman is not obligated to listen to, it's a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. However, most women that I know have taken it upon themselves that they are going every year to shul to make sure that they hear tikiyah shofar. That's something that's widespread practice all over the world. So now what happens if one year the woman is not well and she's not able to make it to shul? So what would you say? So in our communities, we try our best to have somebody come to the house. Now what if I live in a community where they don't have extra people to go running around the whole community and have everybody hear tikiyah shofar? So what are you going to say? What would you say in such a case? Well, the woman has taken upon herself that she's going to have this minhag tov, that she's now going to make sure to do her best to listen to the tikiyah shofar, even though she's not mechuyev to do so. So we assume that a minhag is mitam neder. A minhag has a binding obligation on the person, the same way as if I took a neder, I would be obligated to follow through with the neder. So too over here, when I take upon myself a minhag tov, I am bound by that minhag tov, and if I want to get out of it, I must do a hataras nedarim. That's what the Shulchan Aruch assumes. I must do a hataras nedarim. Or for example, you have many people who go on March of the Living. So on the March of the Living trip, many people are of the custom that they take upon themselves some sort of, they're so inspired by the trip, so they take upon themselves, now I'm going to be machmir on Chol of Yisrael. Now I'm going to be machmir never to eat pas akum, whatever it is. People take things upon themselves, whatever it is. I'm never going to talk during Chazaras HaShatz again. I'm never going to take my cell phone out during davening. Whatever it is, some sort of minhag tov that we take upon ourselves when we go on an inspiring endeavor, we want to take something away from that kind of experience. So very often that's the case. Now what happens? Very often life moves on and we say, well, I didn't realize how difficult it was going to be to actually keep Chol of Yisrael. So over here, it's not so difficult. All the supermarkets sell Chol of Yisrael. But let's say I move out now to a community which is not so readily available. It's not so accessible to me. And now I say, oh, but I remember when I was a child, I took upon myself, when I went on the March of the Living, I remember that I took upon myself, I'm always going to be careful with Chol of Yisrael. Well, that's a minhag tov. You can't just stop observing the minhag tov. A person has to make a hataras nedarim if you want to stop keeping that minhag tov. Is our next speaker here? Anybody know?
Yes.
He's here? Okay. So this Hataras Nedarim Erev Rosh Hashanah is a question, can it take care of that issue? We assume generally that when you have a Hataras Nedarim, one has to make sure that if you're aware of a Minhag Tov that you actually kept, and now you don't want to keep it any longer. For example, Rav Soloveitchik had a Minhag Tov that he took upon himself, that he would always stand with his feet together during Chazaras HaShatz. It was his own chumra, it was his own thing. He had a halachic argument why he felt it was important. However, when he got old, he was not able to do so. And every year, he used to go by Hataras Nedarim, and before he was Matur Nerda, he would say very clearly, I took upon myself many years ago that I'm going to make sure to keep my feet together during Chazaras HaShatz. Now I'm not able to do so any longer, and I ask the Dayanim that I want them to be Matur Nerda on my behalf for that Minhag Tov that I took upon myself. Now, one thing that comes up every year before Pesach is, we have people who have the Minhag not to eat Kibrux. Right? So that's a minhag that many communities have. So what happens? I'm invited to my in-laws do eat kibrux, or my in-laws, whatever it is, I'm going to a person's home who invited me over who does eat kibrux. So I don't want to embarrass them and say, well, I don't want to come over, so what should he do? So look, if it's someone that I'm able to easily say, I don't feel comfortable coming over because my family has this practice of kibrux, and you know they're not going to be offended by that, that's fine. That's very easy. You can just say, it's Pesach, I don't want to eat out, it's fine. However, let's say every year I'm going to have to deal with it. My in-laws eat kibrux, and I know every year I'm going to go to them, and there's no way out. So what am I supposed to do? I want to be there. So what am I supposed to do? So in a case like that where we have, let's say, a one-time exception to the rule, or you have a temporary exception to the rule, Rav Soloveitchik was of the opinion, and many Achronim assume the same thing as well, that you don't have to even make a Hataras Nedarim for that. Why? Because when we assume that minhag mitam neder, when we assume that a minhag is binding on a person, just like a neder would be binding on the person, that is only the assumption when I took upon myself the nether in the first place was, under regular circumstances, I want to take this minhag tov upon myself. However, let's say I'm going to have a once a one-time opportunity. For example, someone came to Rav Soloveitchik, his son was in Eretz Yisrael for the year, he had nowhere to go, this was 45 years ago, he had nowhere to go for the Pesach Seder, the only person that invited him, Eden Gebruch. So what should he do? So it's a one-time exception, it's an onus. In a case like that, we assume, you wouldn't even require a Hataras Nedarim, because it was clear from the outset, when you took upon yourself, that going to do this Minhag Tov, it was clear that you didn't mean under extenuating circumstances, and a Hataras Nedarim would not even be necessary. Let me just close, because I'm over time already. Let me just close with one very important thing. And that is that many Achronim talk about the fact that Shulchan Aruch writes we have to understand Sarah Kal Adam Shiyehe Nizar Sheyavin Mashihu Omer. Person has to understand what we're saying when we say the paragraph of Hataras Nedarim. And for that matter, for those who are not going to do Hataras Nedarim on Erev Rosh Hashanah, for those who are only going to rely on the Hataras Nedarim that we make on Kol Nidre night, it would make sense to take out an art scroll sitter and to look through what the words actually mean. The Shulchan Aruch says a person has to understand what they are saying in order for the Hataras Nedarim to actually work. And it's for this reason that the Chayi Adam writes, Ra'isi mehayireim she'ena mevinim b'lashon HaKodesh. There are many people who don't understand what it says in the text of the Kol Nidre, who don't understand what it says in the text of the Hataras Nedarim, and therefore he says, they have the practice to say the Hataras Nedarim b'lashon la'az. The Chayi Adam writes that many have the practice to say it in English, to say it in a language that they understand, because that's more preferable than just running through the Hataras Nedarim and not understanding what we're saying. So this is something which is very important to keep in mind. We have to understand what the Hataras Nedarim is all about in order for it to actually work. Some people think that Hataras Nedarim is some sort of a Heilige Tefillah that we offer before Yom Kippur. You know, it has a very mystical tune that we sing on Yom Kippur night when we say Kol Nidre. So everyone thinks, oh, this is like the highlight of the prayer. This is something that's a major tefillah that we ask for. It's not. Hataras, obviously, it's an important staple of the prayer on Yom Kippur night. However, what's important to note is that it's something that really we keep in mind. We have to really understand the words when we say the Nusach of Hataras Nedarim. Otherwise, it really will not work for us. Let's just close with a story about the Chazon Ish. There was somebody who once walked into the office of the Chazon Ish and he said he needs to do a Hataras Nedarim. Chazon Ish said, okay, let's get, I'm only here with my Chavrusa. So he said, you're here, you need to do the Hataras Nedarim. I'm here with my Chavrusa, can you go and get somebody from the street to serve as the third Dayan? So the Chavrusa went out to the street and he called in some person, and it was clear that this person was a absolute Am Haaretz. He didn't understand anything about what Hataras Nedarim is all about. He didn't understand what a Dayan is supposed to be doing. He didn't understand what a Bezdin is. But the Gabbai wasn't so careful. The Shamish, the Chavrusa wasn't so careful when he called someone in off the street. He wasn't careful to choose someone that understood. So the Chazon Ish went ahead. He did a quick Hataras Nedarim with this person. And then he said, thank you very much for coming. And the person left. And after the person left, the Chazon Ish said, well, that Hataras Nedarim really didn't work because this person really had no understanding of what we were doing. I didn't want to embarrass him, however, says the Chazon Ish. It's more important not to embarrass him. So I just went through the motions. We did the Hataras Nedarim, and now we're going to do it again. We're going to get somebody else in the room who's going to sit down and serve as the third Dayan, and now we're going to go through the motions again, and we're going to do a bona fide Hataras Nedarim. So it's important. The Chazon Ish has that story in the Pe'er Hadar, which is the official biography of the Chazon Ish. I assume it's a true story. But it's an important story to keep in mind. We go through many different activities, many different motions as we come up to Rosh Hashanah, as we come to Yom Kippur. You find, you know, so many people do kaparis. Many people have the minik to do kaparis in many different ways. But you see, people are pushing on the line. Oh, I want to get kaparis first. I want this. Think about what we're doing here. What are we doing? We're pushing to get a kapara? That's what the Chazon Ish said. You want to do a Hataras Nedarim? It's a wonderful thing to do a Hataras Nedarim. But think about, are you embarrassing someone in the process? Are we just going through the motions and not understanding what exactly we're supposed to be doing? So this story to me was a very powerful one by the Chazon Ish, that he actually took of his time to do a Hataras Nedarim a second time, just not to embarrass the simple person that had come into his office off the street, and not to point out the fact that the person really was not understanding what they were actually doing when they did the Hataras Nedarim. What you see from the story also is that you really have to understand what the Hataras Nedarim is all about. If you don't understand it, the Hataras Nedarim doesn't really work. I guess we're over time. It's time for the next speaker, but anyone who has questions, I'm happy.